Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
Now, let's go to our next prize winner, Tristan Parrish from New York. You have won an award of distinction with the piece Active Fields. And this is a piece which is combining string instruments with one-bit circuits. Please let us know, why are you so fascinated by the one-bit circuits?
That can have a very long answer, but the shortest answer, just to lead into what I will be showing, is that I'm really ultimately drawn to the aesthetic of the one-bit sound. Its primitive square way of tones, so restricted in timbre and in style and volume and everything, I think is a really beautiful expression of pitch of music. And in addition to all of its sort of conceptual underpinnings, and that I'll get into in a minute, but I think it really ultimately comes down to the beauty of this very abrasive electronic sound at the basis of all this work. So,
for us, it was very unexpected in the jury to have this combination, because if you hear about one-bit circuits, you think it's quite trivial sounds. But combining it in the way you did it with the string instruments, it became something very, very different. And that is what impressed us very much in the jury, because we are living in an age of constant upgrades, of constant, you know, improvement, so-called improvement of sounds and of high definition and things like that. And seeing that you can go back to the almost roots, combining that with very old and traditional instruments, that really captured us. And we will be happy to hear about what you will be presenting about your piece.
Thank you.
Please.
I'll get set up.
Maybe while they are plugging in, I can give a sentence of our jury statement. I try to translate that on the spot. In a climate of racing technological progress and constant upgrade, Tristan Parrish created a smart and intelligent work and a fascinating hint on the strength of minimalism and simplicity, convincing us, this is what I'm adding now, convincing us because the sounds itself capture us so much, and the way how it was built and how the forms appear, the form itself appears, was very, very strong to us. I hope I have given you some information and bridged at the same time this little gap. Just give me a sign.
I think
you and you're ready.
Are very close.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Good morning, everybody. There we go. Thanks very much. I'm very, very happy to be here in Linz, and in particular in Austria, which is such a rich history of music, and then also now a rich place for this kind of art that we all do. Thank you very much to Ars Electronica and to the jury for selecting my work, and also to the Bruckner Orchestra, as organized by Dennis Russell Davies, who did a fantastic performance last night. And then especially quickly to Bianca, Peter, Paul, and Simon, who have been extremely helpful the last few days in getting this together. So, what was performed last night was this piece, One Bit Music. I'll start again. What was performed last night was Active Field, which is an ensemble piece, a classical composition for 10 violins and 10 channel one-bit music. And in it, we have the violins and the speakers on stage together accompanying each other. And I'm going to start with a clip of this piece, not from last night, but from the last time it was performed in New York City at the Chelsea Art Museum. A little more volume, please. So, I'm interested in this idea of one-bit music, and in general in the concept of one-bit as a somewhat philosophical, somewhat conceptual approach to working with technology or machines, and also dealing with traditional media in sort of our physical reality, and trying to find an interesting point of intersection. Essentially, one-bit, as in one-bit audio, for instance, means that the sound is created simply by using on and off pulses of electricity sent straight from microchip to speaker, as opposed to a very complex waveform that produces high fidelity sound, for instance, on a CD or MP3 or DVD. One-bit audio is restricted to on and off. You can't have a smooth wave. It's all ones or zeros. So in essence, it's the most primitive way, the most basic way you can create digital sound. And I use the word digital in particular and not just electronic, because certainly electronic sound can be created in a very simple way too with basic components, and you get analog electronic sound. But what I'm interested in is digital sound as kind of an entryway into abstract logic and abstract thought. Now, the music is all comprised of, in essence, ones and zeros. And for me, that sets up a really interesting correspondence between the data and the sound the data creates, in such a way that it doesn't need a digital analog converter. You know, there's no, we're not doing 16-bit sound or 8-bit sound where you take an 8-bit piece of data, you send it to the digital analog converter, and it converts it into a corresponding analog waveform. I'm not doing that. I think that if you have a number like 1001110, and its relationship to, say, the number 157 is a sort of abstract one. It requires a level of translation to get from the digital representation of the number to this analog waveform. So what's attractive to me conceptually for one-bit audio is that on the lowest level, you have the data and you have the sound, and there's a direct relation between them. It allows me to work with logical ideas as a basis for music. Now, in essence, sound, you know, is just a series of high and low pressure in a going through air, hitting your ears, etc. So, if you have something happening at an audible frequency, say at 440 hertz, you get a your brain will just read a pitch A, and there's a very direct link. It doesn't really matter what's happening. So in essence, what I'm doing is I'm using these speakers that you see on stage as a very simple way to move air on and off, in and out, at an audible frequency, and therefore create pitch. But to me, the speakers are just kind of the simplest construction. They just have magnets that pull speaker membrane in and out. And that allows me to sort of approach the whole system as a machine, as a very simple machine, in a way simple, similar to the way the violins are simple. I think that my background is in composition. I was scoring pieces for classical ensembles before I started working with electronics. And I'm always drawn to the purity of these classical instruments, the simplicity of creating a sound wave by vibrating a string, or by having a drum membrane vibrate, or air in a cavity of a wind instrument. These are all very, very simple ideas, and I think that the speaker is similar in that way. Now, this is just a picture of me with piano speaker, right? When I work with these microchips, I try to treat them as very simple machines. Now, there are kind of two categories in my mind of machines. There's sort of a first order machine, which is embodying a process directly, like you have a drill that rotates and screws, and that is a direct embodiment of this mechanism, in essence, this process. And then you have second order machines, which for me is the idea of a machine representing an abstract system, which is to say these computers or early adding machines. This goes way back. In essence, language functions the same way. Language is a very simple, primitive method of embodying abstract thought. And so I have these very, very simple microchips in my circuit, which are only capable of turning on and off electricity. Now, when you have digital computers, of course, binary information allows them to communicate with other computers, with lights, with motors, et cetera. So in essence, they are they don't care about their input and output. It's totally abstract. And you can map the input or output of these microchips to anything you want, really. And for me, I send the data straight to the speaker, data which is meant for communicating with other digital machines, but I treat it directly as sound. So these abstract computers represent logic, and the way they do so is in a very simple, sort of subtle and beautiful way, where you're dealing with a physical machine. You know, there are logic gates inside, and in essence, you're routing electricity different ways. But at the end of the day, you have this nice language where you can deal with information, manipulate it, and treat it as material, and in my case, for sound. This was the result of my first sort of foray into this electronic sound. You can see more clearly the microchip here. A headphone jack in the side of this CD case. It's sort of hard to see that it's a CD case, but plays back this music that I've written, 45 minutes of electronic music, and programmed onto this microchip when you turn it on. And for me, I was attracted to electricity as sort of a physical medium, a physical substance that you can send somewhere the way you can send water somewhere. And in essence, the carrier of information doesn't really, you know, substance doesn't matter in particular, so long as you can represent information with it. And so in this case, you have a battery, a microchip, you can trace the power running from the battery into the microchip. The microchip's output goes to those two volume knobs, and then you can trace that directly into the headphone jack. So it's sort of a step towards making transparent this idea of creating digital sound. It can never be entirely transparent. In a way similar to any laptop musician, there always will be a black box at the center of my work, in essence just because logic is an abstraction. You can't represent it physically, or else you get back into that first order machine kind of idea. So, but I try to get as close to the hardware as possible so that the black box is understandable and that people can approach it in a sort of analytic way. The new version of this project, which will be coming out in the next 6 months or so, is sort of a rethinking of it 5 years later. That other one was from 2005. In this case, I'm returning more to my kind of classical compositional ideas, programming them for this microchip. And I wanted to play you just a short sample to show you the flip side. Instead of electronics with acoustic instrument, this is just pure electronics. You can get maybe a clearer sense of the primitive primality of that sound that I really love. So in essence, I'm dealing with a form of electronics that to me is anti-emulative. Sabine mentioned that sort of the history of electronic music has been one to achieve higher and higher fidelity, better and better reproduction of reality. But what I'm interested, not all of it, of course, but what I'm really interested in is the nature of the machine itself and getting towards sort of the core of what is electronic music. And for me, electronic music is music that's produced exclusively by electricity, sending electricity to these speakers, which I think are sort of the epitome of electronic sound, the embodiment of it. So there's no digital analog converter. You know, we're not emulating an analog waveform. We're just dealing with the electronic signal directly. And similarly, this music is, for instance, when it's in the CD case or when it's performed on stage, the microchips are not playing back pre-recorded sound. They're performing the music. And I write the music the same way as I write a classical score. It's written as notes, which I represent as numbers. And the machine interprets it and plays it back. It's kind of important because the microchip has very, very limited storage. It has 8K of storage. So this entire new album, for instance, of mine, this symphony of sorts, has to fit in 8,000 bytes of information. So it becomes an information theory problem, too, about compression of a complex piece of music into a simple set of instructions, which is, in essence, my role as the composer. Now, these are some images of other pieces, a string quartet, This is a piece for percussion, crotales, and electronics. Crotales are these beautiful ancient bell instruments that have such a clarity that almost becomes electronic themselves. Piece for toy pianos. And just to illustrate, this is the circuit, and each speaker, when I perform, has one microchip and an audio output. And the musicians have these LCD screens where they can see the meter and be in synchronism with the electronics. So physical sound is, and physicality of electronics is kind of the main theme of my work. This is an earlier sketch of an idea called the wooden synthesizer, where similarly to the way one bit on and off pulses create sound, this the wooden tabs that you see sticking out of this disc, when it's spinning, create an audible frequency. And because of the mathematical foundation of how pitch works and how an octave is a doubling of frequency, and the notes between are the ratios in between those outer limits, this 13-disc spinning object creates an octave of pitches just by its nature, and they're all perfectly in tune just by the nature of how frequency works. In addition to one-bit music, I deal with the one-bit idea in video. This is an installation, 18-channel video, which I also used in a dance performance called Impulse Manifold, where I had dancers on stage with the televisions in a similar way to the way I have musicians on stage with my speakers. That was a 15-channel piece, and this is sort of the physical version of that. So I'll briefly mention these machine drawings of mine, which I think are important to the body of my work, because the idea of one-bit information or dealing with simple abstract processes can be manifest in different media and have different expressions in different media. My music, of course, is a linear process. There's no interactivity. Interactivity doesn't come really into any of my work, but as opposed to a static product like these drawings, which deals with the idea of filling a two-dimensional space with a one-dimensional line in an interesting way. In a way, I treat these compositions the same way as I do my music. And these drawings, in essence, become a dialogue between randomness and order, which I think are sort of the two most basic machine ideas. The last project I'll mention is this other group, which kind of is, in a way, it's a 180. It's a noise group of mine called The Loud Objects, with Kunal Gupta and Katie Shima. We're based in New York. And our main instrument is the overhead projector with a circuit board that we construct live in front of the audience. And in a way, this is a maybe even clearer presentation of the transparency I'm interested in electronic music. Because we start off with a blank sheet of plastic, and we begin gluing down microchips, and we begin soldering the circuit live in front of the audience. So there's a period of silence as it's constructed, and they can see the process of routing electricity to microchip to speaker very transparently. And the performances end up looking something like that. So basically, I think that maybe a good way to approach the work I do is thinking of algorithm in general. And you know, algorithm is such a sort of hot topic these days, algorithmic art. And I think that there are there are two ways of thinking of algorithm in art. There's algorithm as a way of generating content, and then there's algorithm as a way of supporting content that's created by a human artist. And I'm sort of still a traditionalist. I sort of believe in the process of writing music and expressing one's own creative ideas. And so for me, algorithm takes the back seat to the creative process and in essence is a way of illustrating the process. So machines are capable of very, very much. And the way I would like to use a machine is to do something that we can do by hand, but the way a machine does it, which is very, very quickly and very precisely, and at speeds we can't imagine. So it becomes, the computer is an important aspect. But at the end of the day, it's these very simple processes that I like to work with in my music and my art. And so for me, algorithm, in essence, is the idea of just adding one to something, or these very, very simple gestures. They're gestures that are performed by computers. And that's kind of the foundation of the idea for one bit. So I think we have time for a few questions.
So please go ahead, whoever wants to pose a question. Is there somebody? No? So if there's nobody, I would like to ask a question.
Please.
I think it's very impressive to see that you're working with traditional instruments and with this one-bit circuits on the other end. So what is for you the difference between instrument and machine?
It goes back and forth all the time. In essence, when you have a piece of music performed by musicians, classical musicians, they are performers, which is such an old art. We have a history of performance, which is really just the interpretation of a text or of a score. And so, in essence, we've always been acting a little bit like machines. But it's also at the foundation of our idea of performance. It's about kind of expression of a score. And that's basically how I became, what my music was before I added in electronics. And the electronics allowed me to have this idea of music, which is kind of an abstract idea, these lines of melody, the way I work with music, as manifest in two very, very different worlds, the human musicians and the electronics. And yes, the human musicians need to play very much in time to be synchronized with the electronics, but they're still human musicians, and there's always going to be slight imperfection, and there's always going to be the quality of being human in their performance. And this sort of simultaneous existence on stage, I think, is really important because in a way, it comes back to some ideas that I've had about randomness recently, which is sort of one of the underlying differences between the human brain and the simple machine is that the human brain has randomness at its core, or a sort of human randomness at its core, biological randomness, and the machine is only capable of machine randomness. So that idea of randomness is applied to a human brain and to a machine have very, very different meanings, and I think they illustrate very well what it means to be a machine, which is in essence a finite machine, and what it means to be human. And so I like that point of intersection, in essence, even though this music, for instance, doesn't have randomness.
So I guess this means to find the human factor in the algorithm is the main thing we culturally have to become aware of more and more, because algorithms is considered as something abstract. Mm. But behind that, and I think also the work of Antoine and Jean-Jacques is talking about that, the algorithm is something which is, you said once, Antoine, it's like clay. We can mold it, we can really work with it like with a sensory or senses grabbable material, right? Is there any other question?